G'day, it's Phil Edwards, Vision CEO here, with a quick invitation to become part of this amazing beacon of hope called Vision. Together we can put our love into action to help people of all kinds build or rebuild their lives on the truth of God. Please consider the part you can play during our upcoming Visionathon appeal, remembering that it's your support that makes Vision possible, including this podcast.
A biblical perspective on life, culture and current events. This is 2020 on Vision.
Well, pornography has become a scourge on the modern world. It has taken a God-given gift to humanity and twisted and perverted it to create a false alternative, a virtual voyeuristic form of sexuality. And ultimately, it is even known to cause death and destruction to people's spiritual lives, emotional and mental health, their self-esteem, relationships, and to those involved in the industry, a much higher rate of drug and alcohol abuse and even suicide. And while Christians are statistically less likely to watch pornography than unbelievers, the Christian population is not untouched or immune to this scourge. So the question needs to be asked, how do we escape or find freedom if we find ourselves caught in the trap of pornography? It's easy to make people feel guilty and ashamed if they've been struggling with it, but it is harder to provide tools and strategies that can lead to true freedom and a genuine escape from the devil's trap. But thankfully, God has raised up people to address this need. One of these is Marshall Ballantyne Jones. Marshall completed his PhD with the discipline of child and adolescent health at Sydney University. His research focused on reducing the negative effects of pornography and sexualized social media behavior on adolescents. So it is our great pleasure to welcome our special guest today, Marshall Ballantyne Jones. Marshall, welcome.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks. It's good to be here.
Well, it's great to have you, Marshall. We're talking about a fairly heavy topic today, but it's also a big issue in the modern world, isn't it?
Most definitely. Pornography is accessible everywhere and is reaching younger and younger people. And it's very much normalized in society as an acceptable and often even useful pastime to participate in.
Yeah, and obviously with smartphones, kids gaining access to things like this, which it's a no-brainer. We all know that, and we all know that in the old days, you know, people had to get a magazine from a newsagent or off an adult. It was much harder for kids. But I want to ask a question, Marshall. Is porn an issue for Christians?
Porn is definitely an issue for Christians. In my epidemiological work, it became obvious as we started to explore more deeply into behaviors of mainstream churches and Christians and staff within them, that there was very little difference between what we're seeing in the secular research and what we're seeing in the behaviors of those in churches. So we're seeing 70% of males in Christian churches having some active struggle with pornography, 20% of females. We're seeing average age of first-time exposure at about 11 to 11 and a half, which coincides, as you said before, with the advent, or in the case of those kids, the receipt of their first mobile phone.
So hang on, let's stop there. So you're saying 70% of church-going Christians, males, 70% of males, and 20 or 30% of females in the church world are accessing pornography.
That's right. And those numbers, the 20% of females, 70% of males, we're talking about monthly or more. So yeah, that's very prevalent. And as with all these surveys, they are often underreported. And since most people are encountering this when they're in their pre-adolescent years, you know, it's often many years before they get personally confronted with that behavior. And by then, often very deep, compulsive, addictive behaviors have set in on them.
Yeah, absolutely. And so can I ask, what you did a PhD that focuses on this issue. Marshall, what led you on that journey to do your PhD?
It's a good question. It was kind of accidental. I got invited to be part of a task force that was being run by the Sydney Anglican Diocese. And I was only invited because I was part of their youth department and they wanted youth representation, but I got involved in their process. They wanted to see if porn was impacting their staff workers, and it was. And from that, we realized how much it was impacting people. And we're also at a bit of a loss because there wasn't really much information out there. This is back in 2013, 14. There wasn't much information about what to do about the problem of pornography. There hadn't been much secular research, no peer review research. And so I embarked upon a research assignment myself to find some answers, and it led me down a rabbit warren that ended up at the medical school at Sydney Uni under some very good supervision, and did some pretty extensive study projects to try and garner some best practice solutions that can be applied to churches and to schools.
Yeah, and so, I mean, to all our listeners today, this is a heavy topic. And maybe you've been touched by pornography, or maybe you're close to someone who has. We just want to put it out there and say we're not trying to condemn people today or make people feel guilty or ashamed. But what I love about Marshall, when I first met Marshall, is he is all about helping people move forward and move out of this issue and find true freedom. Because like any sin, as a Christian, if we do things that we know are wrong, it leads to guilt, it leads to shame, it leads to condemnation, it steals our joy, it steals our faith, I believe. We can't stand before God with great faith when we've got this sort of sense of guilt and this shame for what we've done. So I just want to put it out there today. We are here to help today. Marshall is here to help today. In about 10 minutes or so, we're going to open up our talkback lines on 1-800-316-316. And if you've got any questions about this topic, you might have a comment, you might have an experience, you may have found freedom yourself, or maybe you can ring on behalf of someone else. You can even give us a false name if you want. But we would encourage you today, ring us up, ask Marshall some questions on 1-800-316-316. But I just want to ask you a really basic question here, Marshall. What if someone said to you, oh, what's the big deal with porn? You know, why do you think it's such an issue? What would your response be?
Yeah, well, I do get that statement a lot. And the reality is the research is overwhelming that it is extremely harmful. And it's harmful on different dimensions. It's harmful to those who use it. It distorts their sexuality. It impacts their neurological development. It has biological effects. It has sexological effects. It changes the way they think and see other people. You become more objectifying, and you can actually even increase behaviors which are negative and harmful to the self, particularly if you're acting out on fantasies and wanting to accelerate a more sexualized lifestyle. So those things impact the person, but it's not just the individual that impacts relationships. It's impossible to have a good and godly marriage if you have porn present. We know statistically that the sex lives of those who have the presence of porn within their relationship, either with one or both partners, is less quality than those who don't. But put that to the side, it really impacts things like trust. It impacts the esteem of the other spouse. It basically introduces completely unrealistic expectations which are utterly incapable of being fulfilled in a normal relationship, and statistically and ultimately it accelerates the opportunity for unfaithfulness and just the erosion of the relationship. Of course, children get impacted. And friendships and your relationships with people of the opposite sex and so forth get impacted. So there's that dimension. And one of the big ones, which so many people don't really engage with these days, is it has an enormous societal impact as well. And you mentioned in your introduction that there is a huge downside to those who participate in the production of porn. Normally very vulnerable, disadvantaged people who come from awful backstories and for whom the people who use porn just see them as objects and not as people who have who are being exploited for the personal pleasure. But
yeah, you know, let's stop there, because that is an important point, Marshall, that like you said, statistically, I did look up the stats before this interview, most of the participants in porn movies, in particular females, have more likely been sexually abused as kids. They're more likely to have a drug habit. They're more likely to have experienced significant trauma in their early development years, and they're more vulnerable, and they end up in this industry. And often they're lied to. And I think it's a few years ago, I think three young female porn stars under the age of 25 all committed suicide within a fairly close proximity of each other. And it sort of shocked everyone because there's this illusion, like you said, or this fantasy that you look at these people in these movies and they look all happy and they're having a good time, they're getting paid for it. What's the big deal? But the inner trauma amongst these actors is obviously so negative that some of them have taken their own lives before they even reach 25.
Yeah, it's absolutely tragic. And that is all correct. The much higher rates and risk factors for those terrible consequences. And there's also well-documented rates of coercion and abuse on set, and all sorts of difficult pressures put on them to participate in things they actually don't want to do, that they're not consenting to. And of course, the user doesn't know that. They just see the final product that's been carefully procured by the producers and the distributors. And so, yeah, we just know that in the aftermath, these people's lives are a mess. And even if they escape the porn industry, and if they leave, if they go to start a new life, in many cases, they become Christians, males and females, and want to start the fresh life that the Christian hope offers. But they are forever enslaved to that past because the internet never forgets. And every time a person goes online and consults a video, uses it for their own pleasure, they're enslaving that person to their past behaviors, regardless of what they moved on from. So it's incredibly abusive in the before, the during, and the after period of the lives of those who participate.
And so in an ideal world, the best thing the world could do is everyone stops watching porn. The industry dies, and these people who are sucked into this horrible industry no longer work in it. Now, that would be the ideal. Now, we know that's not going to happen, Marshall, but you know what? I want to put it out there. As Christians, people of God, men and women, if we all stop watching porn and if we all walk away from this, it actually will reduce the industry, and we will have done our part to help to get rid of this industry. And also, you're setting a great example. You know, I was in a church once and I heard a young leader in the church say, oh, you know, he knows a few people struggling with pornography, Christian leaders. And the next time I spoke in that church, Marshall, I put my hand up and said, you know what, guys, I've never watched a porn site. And I wasn't saying that boastfully or to be proud. I was just trying to say to the young men in that church, you know what, guys, you don't need to watch this stuff. I'm still alive. I'm still happy. You know, I'm functional and I haven't watched that stuff. And I pray I never do. But, you know, every Christian should set that as their goal or their ideal, that we say no to this and we do our part to reduce an industry, but also set an example. Because like you said, Marshall, there's many people whose lives are ruined through pornography addiction, isn't there? Just normal, average people who get so addicted, it actually ruins their lives.
Oh, absolutely. And so if anyone debilitated with the addiction will be shriveled in their soul over time. And it doesn't stop there. Like you talk about, if we stopped viewing, that would just diminish the industry. And that's true. It can't exist without demand. And that would be a great thing. But the industry itself has a very tight relationship with mainstream media. Like the Netflix effect, for example. Netflix is highly sexualized now. And so much of its content emulates what is in pornography, both thematically as well as sometimes visually. And so mainstream media also feeds that machine, so to speak. And I think that challenge that you put out for people regarding pornography can be extended to mainstream media. We need to be more critical about what we consume and whether or not we want to encourage broader messages in society which sexualizes everyone. Because victims, of course, actually are our young people, particularly our young girls. Because the messages that come through mainstream media and through social media and, of course, through pornography and, of course, through the standards and expectations of the male cohorts that consume pornography means that females have to live up to a certain standard. And that's why they're more open to being sexualized these days than perhaps what may have happened generations ago. And they lose out because when they are defined by how they look and their sexual appeal, they lose in terms of who they are and their inner identity, and particularly for Christians, the identity that we all have in Christ. And that's a tragedy.
Yeah, amen. And I'll read out a stat. I found 52% of teens have been exposed to violent pornography, which includes choking, slapping, gagging, hitting, and crying. So 52% of young people, like you said, are watching a perverted form of sexuality. And I mean, I heard a horrible story from a law enforcement officer somewhere in Australia, I won't say where, who a young couple, they weren't Christians, you know, 18, they were going out and they started to engage in sexual activity. And the guy literally sexually assaulted her violently. And it was the same as a violent rape. And she went to the police with her family, and the police interviewed the young man, and he honestly said to them, "I was just acting out what I've watched on porn for the last 2 years." And he honestly thought he hadn't done anything wrong. And the police had to say to this family, "You know what, if you go to court, this is going to be so humiliating because this guy's going to plead innocent. He actually thinks he's innocent of a crime because he thought that was normal." Like you said, it had normalized in his brain violence during sex. And it's a tragic story. So the family had to drop the case against this guy, and he walked off scot-free because in his mind he was innocent, and it was all because of the negative impact of pornography.
Yep. Yeah, we're seeing that repeated over and over again. In fact, even in New South Wales 3 years ago, a movement on consent and respect began because some girls in the eastern suburbs got together and reported how many of them had experienced those negative abusive experiences with boyfriends and with males at parties and so forth. And from that, almost a national movement evolved where many, many thousands and thousands of girls came out with the similar testimonies. We're seeing it over and over again. Young men are completely pornified with their view of relating and engaging physically with females. And we're seeing horrible stories of abuse, of harm, and of trauma because the ignorance and broken expectations that are in those young adults and teenagers.
And so we go back to earlier point. Christians, we're calling on you today to walk out of this. We're talking about pornography today. It may be a skeleton in the closet for some, but we are encouraging people today to get that skeleton out of the closet, throw it out the window, and run it over in your four-wheel drive and just get rid of it and move on with your life and experience the joy, the peace, the freedom that God wants all of us to have. Now, we've got a few callers calling, and we encourage you to call in today on 1-800-316-316. We're going to go to our first caller. It's an anonymous caller from Perth in WA. Are you there?
Yes, thanks. I've been impacted by this issue over many years, but I've been dry now from it for 6 years now. I just have a basic phone. I'm not on the internet at home. If I go online, I do it in a public place such as the local library. But what really bugs me is that I'm expected to have a smartphone, iPhone, to live in this society. Others, even Christians, can't understand why I just can't get with it and join the social media scene.
Can I ask you a question? Are you saying that getting rid of your smartphone and getting rid of the internet at home is actually one of the keys to the freedom that you experienced?
Yes, for me it is, yes.
That's really interesting. Can I ask, Marshall, have you got a comment about that?
Look, I thank the caller for his comments, and in many respects, I applaud him for the hard steps he's taken to ensure that he is well managed and safe from temptation, because it's often removing those triggers to start with, which is where your best defense lies. And it's very difficult because we're expected to have a smartphone for QR coding and for all sorts of things in our modern digital society. So it's difficult. There are some for people who are facing a similar conflict. There are some things we can do on our devices that can minimize risk of exposure. There's certain softwares that we can put on, things like Covenant Eyes, Family Zone, and others. There's quite a few other different ones where you can use them to limit what you're exposed to and what you see. And so that's definitely an option to explore if you need to have a smartphone. I understand the social media issue. I'm a professional who speaks and addresses social media content to all ages, particularly high schools, and I don't have a social media account myself, and I haven't had one for 14 years. And we don't actually have to have social media to survive and even to professionally work, but when you need to, there are certain buffers we could put in place to protect us and enable accountability and limitations to the risks of exposure.
Absolutely. To our caller in WA, if you're still there, I want to say well done. 6 years dry. Let me tell you, ask you, what does it feel like now that you know you've kicked that habit and you've walked away from it?
Well, yeah, there's a freedom there. And yes, I know that what I was doing was wrong, so that helps as well. But I also say lots of organisations too and government departments encourage contact via the modern devices available. And it almost seems that if you don't have a device, you're a dummy. So I'm protecting myself.
Well, you know what? I think you're a smarty because your story reminds me of when Jesus said, you know, if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off. If your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. And I'd like to add to that, if the internet causes you to sin, get rid of it. Like Marshall said, you know, Abraham survived pretty well without the internet. So did Moses. So did the Apostle Paul. And as much as we like to use it as a tool today, I want to applaud you, my friend, for doing what you had to do to get rid of something out of your life which was holding you back spiritually, emotionally, mentally, and who knows in what other ways. And well done, brother. And I really want to thank you for calling 2020 today.
Thank you very much.
God bless. Yeah, Marshall, that does raise an interesting point. And I want you to re-emphasize the things you said we can do, those sites and those software programs that can help block us from these pornography sites. Just go there again, please.
Well, there are a number of them. I'm not affiliated with any of these that I'm calling out, but they're certainly starters that people can explore. But Covenant Eyes is a well-known one that's been an industry leader for some years now, and it's not only a software that you put on your devices to limit exposure to different sites, but also gives access of your behaviors to nominated accountability partners.
Okay, can I ask, how does it work? Like, how does it, for a non-IT tech guy like me, how does that actually work? How does it stop you from accessing sites?
What basically works is what we call a VPN. They reroute your internet searches and access and so forth through their own servers and will basically put up a wall against certain things. And if there is content or issues which it is concerned about, it will send a message to your accountability partner saying, hey, Johnny over here has gone to this site you should give him a call and just follow up that everything's okay.
Have you found that that works in the real world? Does that help people?
Look, they are very helpful, and I know many people who use these softwares, and they are excellent first line of defense. Sometimes they can be problematic if and so forth because they conflict with their own sort of proxy servers and so forth. But, you know, you can experiment with different ones. But, yeah, look, they're a barrier, but they're not foolproof. No software is foolproof. Everything can be got around. From time to time when a new one comes out, I'll get a trial and I'll try and break it, if only just to test what's good. I use some for my, you know, I've always used software for my children as they came through into adulthood. Once they become adults, they made the choices about how they wanted to do that moving forward. But it's all about that first line of defense, just to limit the access when you have an urge or when it's accidental.
Yeah.
And there are other strategies, which we'll talk about later, which are essential as well in the process.
Definitely. But we've actually got a couple of callers, Marshall, and we've got the news coming up in a few minutes. So I want to get to these two callers if I can. And the first one is Patricia calling us. Where are you calling from, Patricia?
Rockhampton.
From Rocky. What would you like to ask or tell Marshall today?
Just hang on a minute, please. Where should I be?
This is definitely a live call here, Patricia. Do you want to call back, Patricia, or do you want us to hold?
Yes, I will, because I'm getting an assessment done.
Okay.
No, look, hang on. No. So let me talk to you. I'll get outside. Yes, sorry.
Yeah, what would you like to ask?
Am I on?
You're live on radio now.
Okay, so what I'm looking for is there any information that I can get so that if I come across situations, I can actually address it with something that's
with substance.
Useful.
Yeah, with substance.
And substance, yes.
That's a very good question. Marshall, how do you want to respond to that?
Well, I presume you're talking about for yourself or people in your care. I mean, come across a person who tells you they've been using pornography. Can you be a little bit clearer about what it is that you might encounter?
Well, I don't know that I particularly encounter it straight up. I had it in my own life in history, not for me particularly, but in my family. With in relation to work situations of the men in my family, so and I found ways to deal with that. For example, in a marriage, you can always state that this is not what we signed up for. You promised to forsake all others and live only for me.
Yeah.
So there are those kinds of things that you can do that are biblical.
Yeah. Yep. But you're asking, what if someone says to you, look, I'm struggling with porn, what do I say to them? Marshall, what would your response be to that?
Well, I'm in a marriage, so I come across similar things at different times, or you get a hint.
Yeah, you know. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. But Marshall, how would you respond to that?
Look, I would I'd be encouraging the person to, like Patricia or someone in her situation who's concerned for others, to just become a little bit more aware of what she can do. So there's some good websites that they can go to. I would refer them to a site like, for example, resistporn.org, which has an array of responses you can do for either family or marriages or parenting or church life or school life. And there's some ongoing resources there. But there are other sites as well. There's a lot of the American sites where they deal explicitly with dealing with pornography struggle, from Fight the New Drug, Freedom Fight, Pure Desire, and others. And so even for information about what porn does to you, there's the yourbrainonporn.com, and that's a very, very informative and robust site as well. So there's information out there that you can upskill. And ultimately, if you can get the person who's encountered a negative situation into an environment where they can get some support and some encouragement to change, for example, a local church, for example, with a counselor, then I think they are good steps to take. Because ultimately, if someone continues in the behaviors or continues in condoning those behaviors, then it will start to eat away like cancer into their lives, and it will start to affect those around them as well.
And we've got a couple of callers waiting, Marshall, but just before we go to those callers, can I ask, first point of call, someone comes to you and says, Marshall, I need help with my pornography addiction. I can't break it. What's the first thing, just one thing you say?
I say, okay, it's time to get into a process, because you've got a lot of work to do, and it's going to take time. But if we assure you, we can get free.
I love that. So you've got to basically admit you've got a problem and commit to getting involved in a process which provides support, help, and encouragement, and that's a real key for you, not just trying to deal with it on your own.
Correct.
Love it. Okay, we got a couple of callers waiting, and we have got Wendy from WA. Are you there, Wendy?
Hello, Andrew, and hello, Marshall.
Welcome to the show, Wendy. Have you got a comment or a question for Marshall today?
I've got a comment, and thank you for bringing this subject up. I think it's everywhere. It's on commercials, on TV, and everything like you have all spoken about. And growing up, I was sexually abused, and I wasn't a Christian until my late 40s, and then that's when I dealt with it. Up until then, I was just doing the wrong things. But I have found now that Jesus is the answer. Can I just read quickly Romans 8, verse 5, and just what Marshall was saying about freedom. Those who are dominated by the sinful nature, well, this is a sin, think about sinful things, but those who are controlled by the Holy Spirit, think about things that please the Spirit. So letting your sinful nature control your mind leads to death. But letting the Spirit control your mind leads to life and peace. The sinful nature is always hostile to God. It never did obey God's laws, and it never will. That's why those who are still under the control of their sinful nature can never please God. Last verse. But you are not controlled by your sinful nature. You're controlled by the Spirit, if you have the Spirit of God living in you. So that's just what I wanted to bring up. I think it's just important for all Christians that we are walking as the Lord wants us to walk. We're full of the Spirit, and we can go to Him to help us.
Amen. Hey, that is a really, really pertinent, relevant point. Marshall, have you got a response to that comment?
I wholeheartedly agree with Wendy. Thank you for those verses. I'm also reminded of something like Hebrews 12, which says, fix your eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our race, who in so doing we'll see our sin fall off, the sin that so easily entangles, as we consider him who endured such hardships from sinful people. So we know that Jesus is the ultimate key to change. And so when I talk about a process, part of the process that will give the true and lasting freedom includes us coming before the feet of Jesus again regularly and letting him tenderly and lovingly and carefully change us. He knows we're sinners. Remember Romans 5, that while we're still sinners, Christ died for us. If we remember John 8 and the story of the woman caught in adultery, Jesus didn't condemn her. He forgave her, but gave her the challenge of going away and not repeating the sin. So Jesus is very, I would say, desperate to see us come and allow him to change us. And in that economy of change, that process of change, we can add to the activities of the change process information and steps which we know will maximize our chance of lasting change and minimize the chances of repeating the temptations and the failures that that so easily happen with something as addictive as porn.
Well, well said, Marshall. And, you know, Wendy, I'm glad you did call in, and I love your passion for the Bible. But it actually reminded me of something. I remember reading a stat, Marshall, years ago that said pastors who fall morally, and I'm not talking about pornography, I mean actual moral sin, falling into sin, the majority of them admitted that they'd stopped reading their Bibles and praying regularly because of busyness, and they became spiritually weak and more susceptible to temptation. And I think, Wendy, that's the point you're making, that if we all maintain our walk with God and maintain that fight of faith, which is hard in the modern world to read our Bibles and pray every day and to stay strong, that we are more able to combat temptation and to overcome. Like Galatians says, walk in the Spirit and you won't carry out the lust of the flesh. But Wendy, I want to thank you so much for calling 2020 today.
You're welcome. Keep going, fellas. God is good. Bye.
You, yeah, thank and you, you enjoy WA, then one of the most beautiful parts of the world for sure. Now, we've got another caller on hold who's been very, very patient with us, and there's still time for you to call in on 1-800-316-316. That's 1-800-316-316. We're talking about pornography. You may have a comment, a question. You may have a friend or a relative who's trapped in this. You want some help, some advice for them, or maybe you've been touched personally. But we've got Mike from Tasmania on the line now. Mike, welcome.
Gentlemen, morning. A helpful men's course or program is by Alan Myers. It's called Valiant Man, and I think that's a helpful thing.
It's brilliant. And, can I ask, have you done that one yourself, Mike?
Yeah, I've done it and I've led it once, and you know, like this activity affects our brain, but it also affects our spirit. You know, we're not just bodies. You know, we're bodies and we're spirits, or we're spiritual beings with a body. And so, you know, it's not just sort of retraining my sort of neural pathways per se. It's that's doubtless helpful and necessary, but it's doubtless the spirit that, you know, if the Son Jesus shall set you free, you shall be free indeed.
Absolutely, yes. The Valiant Man Project. You're an endorser of the Valiant Man Project. I think I did that one years ago as well. It's very good. It's an Aussie-based one too, which is always good. So have you experienced a struggle in this area, Mike, or have you gotten friends or relatives who struggle with this area?
Well, you know, the Lord has set me free from, the Lord has set me free from stuff.
Yep.
And, this would be stuff.
Absolutely. And can I ask, what's it like on the other side of it now, like inside your spirit? Like you said, you're a spiritual being. What does it do to your spirit when you do walk free of this?
Oh, it's wonderful. I mean, I'm a married man now for 20 years. And, you know, like, okay, well, you know, sometimes on my, you know, feed, I'll see an ad I don't want to, okay, block that out, you know. And, but it's like any sin to be free of it, it doesn't mean I'm not tempted. You know, everybody's tempted by a variety of things.
Absolutely. Well, that's an interesting, that's a really valid point, because it reminds me of the story of Joseph, who was tempted by Potiphar's wife, and he didn't stand there and go, you know what, Mrs. Potiphar, I'm just going to say no today. I mean, he ran, didn't he? Because he knew he was weak, he knew he was a man, and he would have been tempted. She probably was a staggeringly good-looking woman. I believe the wealthy Egyptians in those days chose their wives at a big marketplace where they chose the prettiest ones, and the more money you had, the prettier your wife would be. And yeah, he was tempted, and he ran away. So he accepted and acknowledged his weaknesses, and that's how he overcame that. But Mike, I want to thank you so much for calling in on the line today to 2020.
Thank you, bye.
God bless. Yeah, Marshall, it does raise an interesting point, doesn't it, that we have to acknowledge our weakness, don't we? We have to acknowledge, especially as men, I think, that we are susceptible to visual imagery, aren't we? And we have to avoid it like the plague.
No doubt. And pornography really does hone in particularly to the male mindset. We know when we break down the female users' viewing patterns that only a smaller proportion of those women who look at pornography, less than 40%, are interested in visual pornography. For women, it's more broad, more complex, more nuanced. They love romance, they love story, they love fantasy, and that. But with males, right, it's just visual, and the themes that come across also resonate with male thinking as well. They are the heroes. The females are the objects. They get their way. The others are willing to do anything. So for a person who's, frustrated in life, frustrated in their relationships, and wants to just disappear into fantasy for a while, that just resonates so deeply with them. Of course, with pornography, the people that they use in the production, they're not generally normal people. They are exceptionally beautiful and artificially procured as well, in a way that is not replicable in most people's lives. And so,
and this is how it was put to me years ago: the reality of a physical relationship never matches the fantasy of porn, does it?
It cannot match the fantasy of porn.
Yeah.
No.
And that's why guys have to stop watching it, because it's like, if you think that's normal, if you think that's what sex is like, it's not. It's pretend. It's made up. It's often drug-induced. And these people are getting paid a lot of money, and they're broken. And it's not what the real world is all about, is it, Marshall?
That's right. I mean, there's a film crew in there, for starters. Most married couples don't have a film crew when they're engaging in intimate behavior. It's utterly unrealistic. And as I say, not replicable, which is why when you introduce that into a real relationship, it ends up putting up very immediate wedges and barriers, because the other partner knows very quickly that they're being expected to do something which is not realistic, and that can make them question themselves and whether or not they are good enough. So that can be actually often brutal for people's self-esteem and their sense of identity.
And it's my understanding that women feel a sense of betrayal when they find out that their husband is watching pornography, almost like an adulterous affair, that they feel that they've been betrayed. Is that your observation as well?
Oh, no doubt about it. Not always, but the majority of the times when particularly a Christian wife finds out that their husband has been looking at porn, usually in secret, it raises a lot more questions about their marriage than merely am I not good enough. But it raises questions of trust, because they think back all the previous times that they were intimate together, and they're wondering, was he ever thinking of me? Was I ever on their mind? Am I ever going to be good enough? Will I ever satisfy them? And that is terrible, and that can then, you know, quite rightly make them feel like that they were having other people in the bed with them. And that is, you know, the definition of adultery. And so Jesus was right, Matthew 5:28, that, you know, if you look upon a woman lustfully in your heart, you've committed adultery. Because the inner person is as important to God as the outer person, and he sees what's done in secret. And we don't want to buy the lie that's so easily fed by the mainstream media and porn media, that we can have a fantasy and that can be divorced from the real people that we relate with, because that's not how real relationships work.
Absolutely. And look, here's some good news. I read it. This is an American study. Those who are happily married are 61% less likely to look at porn. That's interesting, isn't it? Those who are happily married are 61% less likely to look at porn. And we did have a person ring in before. They didn't want to go on air, but they did make a point, Marshall, and I want you to comment on it. They did say that if, you know, husbands and wives both actively engage in physical activities together, if I want to put it like that, according to, you know, 1 Corinthians chapter 7, if there is a mutually loving, you know, physical relationship, then it's probably less likely that a man will look at porn. So do you think there is a responsibility on both men and women? Because as a Christian leader, I've encountered marriages where both the male and the female, not the same marriage, but in different ones, have refused to be intimate with their respective spouses, and it's caused all sorts of issues. Have you come across this as well in your studies?
Yeah, sure. And I want to be very careful how I comment on this. Marriages can be pretty problematic and ugly at times, and people can have a difficult relationship, and their intimacy levels could be poor, and their communication levels could be poor. And you know, in that situation, if someone finds himself in a, let's call it a stuck marriage, a loveless marriage, it's important that both of them come to the middle and work at it and cultivate something fresh and new. Get some help, get some support. That's really important, that no one is satisfied with that status of marriage, because as Jesus said in 1 Corinthians 7, your husband, your body belongs to your wife. Wife, your husband belongs to your body belongs to your husband. And so therefore, you know, we have an obligation as servants of our spouses to you know, improve the situation. But, and this is where we're going to be really careful, if you are in a dissatisfying, non-intimate marriage, that's no excuse to go and use porn. Right? We need to be absolutely clear here. Porn is a really wicked, evil enterprise. It does no good for the people in it, or for the people who use it, or for the people adjacent to the users. It in itself is very evil, and it's something that has no place in the lives of Christians. And so, therefore, if you feel it's justifiable that your outlet for an unhappy marriage is using porn, well, you're mistaken. If you need outlets, right, I would encourage you to work hard with your spouse and put the hard yards in and try and recultivate what has been lost, for example.
Great response, Marshall. Yeah, hey, we've got one more point, yep.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, doesn't matter your age either. I mean, senior people can have good sex lives if they work at it. Just ask Patricia Wirikoon, the famous Christian sexologist. She's written a book on old couples and their sexual lives. She knows it's a case, but a lot of us don't have the tools or perhaps the willingness in the short term to put the work in, and that's where I'd encourage anyone who's frustrated to turn to as a priority.
Excellent. Hey, we've got another caller on hold. They've been very patient, and it's Susan from Perth in WA. Are you there, Susan?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
What would you like to say or ask Marshall today?
I just wanted to say I went through this because I don't like to watch it, but my husband was. He was addicted to it, and he used to force me to watch it, and it was so hard. Like, he wanted to do as what he was seeing and everything. Not even it ruined our life. Like, he's separated, he's gone. Not because of that, few other reasons, but the kids was also affected. I have two daughters. Like, my younger daughter, older one, actually saw him. When she was he was watching all this, and she was, I think, 10 years or something. And she went and watched it when nobody was there. And then she wanted to do it to her sister. And they are 5.5 years different. So she was sexually abused by her sister. My younger daughter was abused by the older one. So I never knew this till recently. A few months ago, she just broke up to me. See, Mom, I went through this and things like that. So it's really hard. I don't know what to do with the kids right now. I want to take them for counseling. But right now, they say she abused her for 3.5 years. And then she stopped because the younger ones are saying, I don't want like that.
Oh, man, that's a heartbreaking story, Susan. Marshall, how would you like to respond to that?
Susan, I just want to say I'm so sorry that that's happened, and it's not right. Mm-hmm. None of that is right. It's not right that your husband should have forced you to watch porn, and it's terrible that the children were exposed to it, and then the outcomes to your youngest daughter and also your oldest daughter as well. I mean, that's just awful all around, and so just my sympathy for that, and I would, you know... I would encourage you to consider the counselling that you wondered about for your children, because we don't know the extent that exposure's harmed them, but it's definitely worth exploring, even with a school counsellor or with a local counsellor, where you can bring it before them and just explore and see if there's any residual harm or hurt that's coming from that.
Yeah, there is, and they don't want to go right now. They said, Mom, we will go, not right now. They're thinking of the expense which they have to face. I said, don't worry about the money. I'll pay you whatever it is, but still they don't want me to spend for them. So it's really hard. They said they will do it when later on. But I know both of them are affected with it. They are affected really bad. So I'm praying they both don't believe in God anymore. So that's another factor that I want them to come to Jesus first. So it's very hard. And the dad doesn't know anything about this. They haven't told to dad, and we don't talk to each other anymore. It's really hard. I don't know if I should bring this to him. Yeah.
It's awful. And I think it's just another example of the negative impacts of pornography, that people think, oh, I'm just watching it. I'm not doing any harm. I'm not hurting anybody. Well, here's a real story. Of someone who probably thought that to themselves, but there's two individuals now who are very damaged because of it. It's just awful.
Yeah, it is.
Marshall, have you got any more advice for our caller today, maybe, for just moving forward, what she can do?
Well, look, it sounds a very complicated story, and it'd be disingenuous of me to be too strong in my advice, but I certainly would encourage you to pray and to share this with people in your church in confidence, the right people, for support. And maybe out of that, some wise advice might come that can then lead to some help, support, both for you and for your children.
Okay, thank you.
And Susan, I want to thank you for having the courage to call us today too and sharing your story. And we just do. We just pray for you and your family, and that your daughters will come back to know the Lord, and and that God's presence and peace will come back to all of you, okay?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, God bless you, Susan. Thank you so much for the call.
Thank you, bye. Thank you, bye.
Oh, wow. Marshall, if ever we needed an example of why porn is such a problem, there it is right there, just one story. And those stories are multiplied into the millions around the world. But we are coming to a close, Marshall. I just want to ask you, what are your final thoughts or what suggestions or tips do you want to give people today?
Yeah, so, I mean, with the short time, I'll be quick. It's super important people understand just what damage porn has done to them as users. And we just know there's a mountain of body of research that there's been a lot of brain impact on people who have been addicted to porn. And part of the process of getting out of the habit is to work hard at changing the brain, and particularly the habits that we have that we go to, particularly when we're under stress and just triggering moments. And so encourage people not just to work hard at abstaining from the negative behavior, but also cultivate new activities and actions which can build new pathways and new go-tos in our mind and our hearts when we're feeling displaced and tempted. So a process for that. They call it neuroplastic change, and it's one element in the way forward. It's important that we also recognize in our hearts that porn is wrong, and we repent of that. It's very important we bring our sins before the Lord and seek His loving and gracious forgiveness, because that's what He wants to do, and that's the basis for all change when it comes to a moral issue. And lastly, we really want to work with others. Support groups are very important. I've written my own support group. That's a short course support group for churches to use called resistprogram.org. Resistprogram.org. If anyone's interested in looking at that in their church.
So that's a course for a church to do, like in a small group setting or even in a larger setting. And
correct.
How many sessions or how many hours of sessions does that involve?
It's a 5-session program, 5-week program. Each session is 2 hours, and it's group work design. So someone will lead the group through the materials, and the group will work together to support each other through the change process. And it's a very effective program. We've been studying its effects on the different groups that have been using it. So it's an example of a quick starter for people getting help.
So that's resistprogram.org. Excellent. And you've got another website too, haven't you? DigiHelp, DigiHelp.io. What's that going to, what resources are we going to access through that?
That's for schools, particularly independent schools in primary and high school. They're PDHPE, HPA programs, which look at a lot of the issues around using technology, online sexualized media, and so forth. And so that's school-based. That's used by quite a number of schools around the country. And so that if you're engaged with schools, that would be something that would be interesting to you.
Excellent. So that's DigiHelp, DigiHelp.io. Marshall Ballantyne-Jones has been our special guest today. He's got a PhD in the discipline of child and adolescent health, and he focused on the negative impacts of pornography and sexualized social media behaviors on adolescents. And Marshall, I just want to thank you so much for joining us on 2020 today. And everyone out there listening today who's been impacted by this, maybe you need help. I want to encourage you, reach out to someone, reach out to a pastor, a friend, or a counselor, or someone. Reach out to Marshall through his websites, resistprogram.org or digihelp.io. And Marshall, once again, thank you so much for joining us on 2020 today.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, Andrew, and thank you to your listeners for your time.
Thanks for taking time to listen to this audio on demand from Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, go to vision.org.au.